AI Lab
AI Lab
Radio show about the European Artificial Intelligence Lab. The latest developments in artificial intelligence truly are astonishing. They will soon be advancing exponentially with the increasing scientific and economic power that is invested by research and industry. However, artificial intelligence and machine learning are difficult to understand, not only for the general society, and to be trusted, not least because of implicit biases. In February 2019, McKinsey published that, quote, if Europe on average develops and diffuses AI according to its current assets and digital position relative to the world, it could add some 2.7 trillion euros or 20% to its combined economic output by 2030, unquote. But how can we ensure that our European education systems, our legal and ethical frameworks, in general our society, is ready for its adoption by 2030? In light of this urge, the European Artificial Intelligence Lab focuses next to scientific, technological and economic aspects strongly on legal, cultural, educational and ethical dimensions of artificial intelligence. This allows a holistic model with considerations on human values and elementary questions on what AI should or should not do, as well as how and by whom AI systems are developed, deployed, used, and monitored. From the perspective of 13 major cultural operators in Europe and led by Ars Electronica, the European Artificial Intelligence Lab centers visions, expectations and fears that we associate with the conception of a future all-encompassing artificial intelligence. Partners of the European Artificial Intelligence Lab are Ars Electronica from Austria, Center for Promotion of Science from Serbia, Zaragoza City of Knowledge Foundation from Spain, Laboral Centro de Arte y Creación Industrial also from Spain, Kersnikova Institute, Kapelica Gallery from Slovenia, Science Gallery Dublin from Ireland, Onassis Stegi from Greece, The Culture Yard from Denmark, Gluon from Belgium, Hexagon Scene National Arts Sciences from France, Soul Festival from Georgia, Le Lieu Unique from France, and VAG from Netherlands. While industries are pumping massive amounts of money into cutting-edge technologies to develop intelligent systems, mentioned cultural operators are connecting artists with research institutions and scientists to fill a gap in dealing with the social components and political questions arising from these enormous technological advances.
An extensive program of activities addressing different target groups at various experience levels was carried out and will be continued until the end of the project. By addressing AI and its societal impacts through exhibitions and conferences, which target art and general audiences, and at the same time fostering the knowledge on AI with educational and training activities, the AI Lab contributes to a critical and reflective society. In this broadcasting series, we will talk with five artists about the topic of AI and gender, or AI and bias. It is being increasingly acknowledged that AI systems are often biased. AI appears neutral, but it's made by humans, which means it internalizes all the same bias as we have, including gender and racial bias. There have been genuine instances which have raised questions about the fairness of decisions made by AI systems. One popular case study is Amazon's AI recruitment tool. Amazon had developed a tool to help with recruitment, which helped in screening of resumes. It was trained on 10 years' data of Amazon's internal recruitment decisions. Amazon later decided to remove the tool when it was discovered that the tool was more likely to pick men over women. Focusing on ethical dimensions and human-centric AI developments, we will discuss what kind of data is considered and how it is gathered for AI. How are artists dealing with AI and bias? We will also tackle questions such as, how do AI systems get biased and how can we avoid it? How can we build new ways of establishing trustworthiness, transparency, and explicability of AI in interaction with citizens?
The European Artificial Intelligence Lab is co-funded by the Creative Europe program of the European Union.
Yo, press the button.
Karen Palmer is the storyteller from the future. She is an international artist and TED speaker. Her work is at the intersection of artificial intelligence, immersive storytelling, neuroscience, behavioral psychology, implicit bias, and the parkour philosophy of moving through fear. For her recent interactive installation, Perception IO, Palmer was awarded with this year's STARTS Prize honorary mention. STARTS Prize is a grand prize of the European Commission honoring innovation in technology, industry and society stimulated by the arts. Palmer's Perception IO is the future of law enforcement. She is addressing police violence and racism by involving the participant. Latter assumes the role of a police officer watching an interactive training video of an escalating volatile situation. More about the project itself, future reality and truth, and the role of the participant we will hear in the following interview with Karen Palmer.
Perception IO, or input output, is the future of law enforcement. It's an artificial intelligence data set which is emotionally responsive to the participant and their potential bias. So what it is that you go into the space, and it's currently on Cooper Hewitt Museum at the moment in New York, so no one can get in there, but maybe if you're able to get in there, you'd be able to experience a one-person show. So you step into the space and the screen welcomes you as a global citizen, because this is the world we're moving into, this world of, I would say, taking down of borders, where what's happening in the UK is very similar to what's happening in America in terms of the integration of technology and government and society. So with this kind of system comes a global citizenship. So you welcome you as a global citizen, and it wants you to experience what it's like to train artificial intelligence. Because most people is like, well, a computer is, they're neutral, right? It's like, no. A human codes a computer, right? An artificial intelligence. So you as the participant, you are now transformed into being a cop, and you watch the screen as if you are a police officer. And the film, the artificial intelligence and machine learning, is monitoring your emotional reaction. And you will come across two characters at different times, a black person and a black man and a white man. And depending on your emotional response, that will determine if that person is treated as a criminal or somebody who needs support. Because as you watch it, the scene will unfold, and every 5 to 10 seconds, a narrative will branch. So if you respond to the scene with anger, maybe you may end up arresting the person or shooting the person. If you respond to the character in the film with calm, maybe you will be able to rationalize what's happening, and maybe you'll realize that the person actually has mental health issues, and because you're able to pick up on the cues as opposed to reacting to what's happening. So there's a black character and a white character, and the only difference is the color. So you at the end, you're going to have a response that is determined by your reaction. So maybe you might find that you shot the black person, even though there may be mental health issues, and that maybe you didn't shoot the white person. And then it would be ask you to reflect upon why you felt that way, why you felt angry, why you felt threatened. Or maybe the flip side is that maybe the person was a criminal, because it could be mental health or criminal. And maybe if you weren't assertive enough, you yourself got shot. So you have to be authentic. You have to show up, because there's consequences either way. But what it's showing you is two things. One is how data set and artificial intelligence is built, that it's a human that trains it. And in this case, it's your emotional reaction trains it. And also it shows you about your potential implicit bias. And I'm not pointing a finger at people saying, hey, you are racist, you are biased, because these are very complex things. And as part of my collaboration with artists, and the scientist I work with on this project was Emily Blasett from NYU. She's an associate professor of behavioral psychology. She, you know, warned me that it's not a black and white in terms of how people respond to a situation. People's subconscious and their reactions and their motivations are much more gray than that. So all I'm asking for is people to reflect on what they've seen, and they themselves know in their heart and their soul and their spirit if they what they felt and why they may have felt that way.
Sir, what the fuck do you want?
Calm down! Sir, do you have a piece of ID with you? Sir, I need to see your ID.
What the fuck do you want, man?
Back up!
The Starts Prize honorary mention is super, super, uber prestigious, no? It's really, I feel sad that, I feel that I've been invited to a very big party and then I couldn't go because of the festival, you know, because of the coronavirus. So it's like, it's I feel like, wow, not because it's such a prestigious award to be honoring mentioned in, and it's such a iconic festival to be a part of. So I'm a bit like in my heart, a little bit disappointed that I can't go to kind of be in the glory and the glow of such a to receive something like this. But I feel because art, this the unique thing about this award is that it's about art and science at the intersection. And most of my work I get acknowledged for is immersive storytelling or artificial intelligence or tech, and looking at areas of ethics and bias. So it has a strong kind of academic and a strong science and a strong art, but I've never had an acknowledgement where at this intersection of art and science. It feels very nice to be acknowledged in this very unique perspective.
You mentioned audiences or people's reflection, and did they report you what was for them the process, or when they encountered, for example, a person there?
I was only in New York for the show for one evening, and I got a very emotive response. And some people did report back to me that they felt totally immersed, first of all, because I use sound design as well as this film, and it's shot from a POV, and they were like, they could feel their heart. And some people didn't actually, the people I spoke to actually didn't reference the color so much. They were referencing how they felt calm and that they focused on being calm because they realized it was a very high pressure situation. So that they were, and how they were accustomed to being in high pressure situations. And they were understanding the importance of maintaining being calm in that situation. So they were reacting to it in a way of they needed to be cognitive, alert, responsive, and aware. So they kind of didn't allow themselves to get caught up in maybe preconceptions, because they came in there saying, this is a high pressure situation. I cannot afford to get emotional. They were like, wow, that was really intense. And I felt the intensity. Another person that gave me feedback, and again, they didn't give me feedback on color, Because when it to do with artificial intelligence, there's always a room for error, right? And so I always ask people, you know, was it accurate, first of all? And it is very accurate. Like, I would say it's like 75% accurate, which is really high. And another lady came back to me and said she did it the first time and she got fear and she was nervous. She didn't tell me if she was nervous of the black or the white person, but she said in general, she was very nervous. And then she said she waited in the queue to go back again. And she said she wanted to use it as an opportunity to test the system, but also learn to master herself. And she went in the second time and focused on being calm, and it read her emotions as calm. And I was like, wow, it really works then. You know, I was really excited because often people go to my experience and go, okay, let me test it. Let me see if it works. And it's always a little nerve-wracking, like, yeah, let's see if it works. And it almost always does work, you know? So it's exciting that I've created something which is accurate, because if it wasn't accurate, it wouldn't be a good immersive experience. But then also within storytelling and film and the social issues that it's bringing to it, it's totally immersive and totally relevant for the world that we live in now, unfortunately.
You mentioned now a few times storytelling, and on your website, one can read that you are a storyteller from the future. You use or combine storytelling and AI. And where do you see the advantage of storytelling in combination with AI?
I see the advantage with me because I started this process of working with AI and storytelling specifically in 2016. And I was trying to create a very unique, perceptive, responsive, immersive experience. So at the time, I wasn't aware of anybody else doing that. As I kind of went through my career and I was invited to do talks and go to events, I came across other artists using it, but none of us are using it in the same way. So I came across an artist. He would train his data sets, and then from training the data sets on like old, like classic masters artwork, and then he would leave it processing overnight, and then it would recreate art. So he would use AI to recreate art, which is kind of this. And they look, some of them looked, he said that like 99% of it doesn't work, but the 1% is very beautiful. That's part of that classic conversation of, you know, will AI ever replace art? And that to me is not of interest, that specific question. My question is of how AI will affect our society and how implicit bias by design will affect our society. So in general, I can't say how it benefits storytelling, but I see in terms of interpretations, how different people, because, you know, artists are very cutting edge and AI is like very much an important component of the conversation as we move into a new world now. It's very interesting how they want to interpret AI in their work. So that guy was looking at interpreting art almost replacing humans. And I'm interpreting AI as almost a character in the world that I'm showing people, and how that is going to impact and affect people's lives.
Why is it important to engage audience in this storytelling process, and how this is implemented in the following projects or works?
Over, I would say, like a decade ago, I started to look at storytelling and tech, because I really envisaged that the future was participatory, that it wasn't about an observer watching an experience or even watching a film, because my background is a filmmaker, but it was that participant had an active role in the experience. So that was what I realized a decade ago, and then stumbled through working with art and film and tech for the next kind of decade. Well, probably that's more like 14 years ago, actually. So I did that for like a decade. And then I created a series of projects that were very interactive. And one was SyncSelf 2, which used a neuro headset to monitor the algorithms of people's brain. So you put this on, you'd watch the film, and the film would branch depending on if you were focused or if you were calm. And I did that because I wanted people to become aware or more conscious of their emotional state. So for me at that time, that was 2015, I wanted to affect and impact the participant to give them greater self-awareness of their subconscious behaviors, so that once they're more aware, they could then be more master themselves. And then I evolved into Riot in 2016, where Riot now is an emotionally responsive film that watches you back as you watch it and branches in real time, depending on your emotional response. And that was more specific now to make you conscious of your subconscious behavior. And also I wanted to put people in the middle of a riot type environment, because that was my kind of response to the Ferguson riots, where Michael Brown was killed by the police. I wanted people to realize that what they were reading and seeing on social media news was not the full story. And that maybe if we put you in a riot environment, you'll see, like, as a visceral emotional experience, that you kind of experience it for what it is and understand the kind of the heightened tension there and the pressure that people are under, and not how you're portrayed in the media, how it's being portrayed. And people from Riot were like, because Riot kind of really changed the game, because I ended up showing that all around the world from 2016 to last year. And people were really visibly affected. So an example of that would be a lady came and did the experience. I normally travel with the experiences all the time, but sometimes I might have to just go get something to eat or something. And I showed the exhibit at the Future of Storytelling. And then I went to Amsterdam for IDFA. And I met a lady in the street corner, who's a friend of mine, and she goes, I'm supposed to go to the airport, but I need to stay and talk to you because I need to tell you what your film did to me. I was at FOSS last month and I saw it and I was like, oh my God, what happened? And she said, I did your experience and it was branching, the narrative branches. And her branch ended where she got very nervous at the end. And what happened is that she was seeing a character on the film, a young black girl being arrested by the police, and she was triggered because she was brought up in Argentina, which was a dictatorship. And she realized that she had, when she was growing up as a young girl there, that every time they met her, the police or military would pat her down. And when she saw that in the film, the girl being pat down, she realized that she hadn't actually dealt with it, that she'd actually internalized it. And that she said, since doing that experience, she's been dealing with that emotion and starting to, it was almost like cathartic for her. And I was like, wow, this really works. You know, this shit really works. This is amazing. So it was able to make her be in a film experience, an emotive, immersive art experience. It was a cathartic experience for her, where she was able to deal with her subconscious. So for me, as an artist, it's essential for audience members to be participants, because I use it as a way to empower you and give you greater self-awareness. With the perception I owe, it then went on to being making you more aware of your potentially implicit bias. And my inspiration for it is that I came from the directing music videos and TV commercials. And I did research over the years in terms of how, when we're watching these things, our brain is in a very kind of theta state of receptivity and influence. And there's people like Edward Bernays who have become masters of how to use media and film to connect with your subconscious and manipulate you. And I was like, hold on. Like, these people are using this thing for this purpose. No, like, no way. I need to use, as opposed to me using media to project something onto you through your subconscious, I want to use media to go into your subconscious and reveal to you what's there so that you can confront it and be faced by it. And you can be empowered, as opposed to projecting something upon you. I'm going to bring something out to empower you.
Future reality and truth are two significant notions in your projects. And I would want to know, what do they mean for you in terms of your work, and how do you deliver them to the audience?
I do read, I do watch things, but I like to think. And I feel it's very important for us to engage our own cognitive thinking, right? And I like to think, I like to contemplate, and I like to reflect, and I like to connect dots up. And it's very, once I'm doing that with my kind of personality, is that it's quite easy to see what's coming, you know, because a lot of what around us is a distraction. So I haven't got time to be distracted. And from doing that, just like reflecting on what's happening, the ideas will choose me, like something will jump out of my chest. So say there's lots of talk in America at the moment about defund the police. And I know that sounds like a great plan. And as a Black chick, I can actually 100% resonate why that would be a good way to go. My concern would be, what would you replace that with? Because I anticipate that in the wings is waiting biased artificial intelligence networks and automated robotic systems. So what I say is that you can kind of argue with a biased or racist cop, but you can't argue with a biased or racist algorithm. So that was kind of part of the inspiration for Perception.io. Because I'm also like a research-based artist, so I'm researching things with looking into like reading papers, talking to techno activists, talking to scientists, talking to policy changers, talking to thought leaders in social justice areas, and getting an understanding of different context of the same picture. So that gives me a great insight. And from the insight, I kind of look at, what do I feel I want the answers to now? How will I, what's the most important fundamental thing? And it's kind of like something that stops me from sleeping. Like, what is the urgency of the moment that we need to resolve or solve? And that's how the project chooses me. Storyteller from the future is that I'm very concerned about what is to come. And I create what I describe as immersive documentaries from the future, so people can experience the future today. So when it comes to things like artificial intelligence and these conversations like that relate to ethics and bias, is that I got to say to you, I don't think, and in my experience, most working class people or people of color generally are interested in these type of conversations. They're more focused on paying the bills or having fun, stereotypically speaking. So, and then when I've sat on stages doing talks, next to me will be like an academic talking about computational science and another academic talking about something else. And I have been in this field for years and I'm still like, don't understand what the hell they're saying. And their delivery is so boring. And it's like, often, not all, obviously. And the thing, because some of them are very, very brilliant, but I'm connecting these themes with the people whose life it's going to affect, as opposed to just talking about these things abstractly. I'm saying to people, biased networks are going to be directly affecting your life. Like, you're going to try and get a job and your surname and your postcode is going to wean you out, and you're never going to get past the first level of the algorithms.
Perception.io. Your future needs you today.
All I would add is to leave a message to the listeners, is that for them to say to them that I'm the storyteller from the future, and I have come back to enable people to survive what is to come through the power of storytelling. However, I didn't come back alone. And that if you're listening to this and it's resonating with you, that maybe you also came back, that I would like them to start to consider and contemplate on what they could have possibly come back to do, and to today start to put that into action.
This was an interview with Karen Palmer, the storyteller from the future. She received this year's Starts Prize honorary mention for her interactive installation Perception.io. At the moment, she is working on her new future documentary titled Consensus Gentium. Later will show the future of weaponized tech and biased algorithms. Current edition of AI Lab Radio is available on cba.fro.at. Microphone, Georg Steinfelder and Irnea Zavetz. Interview with Karen Palmer composed by Jernej Zavec.